and welcome to Decoded, a Marriott Digital Services podcast, where we discuss the latest and greatest in digital marketing. Join us, along with special guests and leaders across the travel and digital marketing industries, for new episodes every second Monday. Now, let's get into today's episode.
Welcome to another episode of Decoded, and we are back. And my name is Chris, and I'm joined by my co-host Mike. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Well, Chris, how are you? It's good to be back.
Yeah, absolutely. We've taken a small break, longer than what I thought it was, but we're now back, and we're really going to focus this podcast around the latest and greatest in the digital news and how it's evolving. There's been a lot going on over the summer, but we had a good, healthy, and relaxing break. But did you get up to much, Mike, over the last few months while we were on a hiatus from the podcast?
Yeah, I would say that the sabbatical was nice. I, you know, went off and saw the world and came back, and things were good. Yeah, a lot. I just wrapped up some recent travel to New England for a couple of weeks, and I feel like we've been getting back on the swing of things here. You know, with Delta's still raging and a thing, but I feel like there's a lot more options to do things than there were this time last year. So we're happy, we're healthy, we're going to stay that way, and I hope the same with you.
Yeah, we got to see a little bit of America as well. We did a 2,500-mile road trip across 9 different states. So that was fun. My 11-year-old twins absolutely love sitting in the back of the car for that long. But you're right. The world is a different place from this time last summer, but it's still got a long way to go, right?
Well, one thing, if I could acknowledge before we jump in, I want to say I love the new theme music. My only question is, Jeremy Clarkson wasn't available to do that read?
We don't have the budget for Jeremy Clarkson, unfortunately. Okay.
All right.
Well, let's jump into the news. So as we mentioned, we're going to really focus around some of the latest and greatest in the news and really help kind of bring that to life and kind of give our own perspective on it and how it's maybe businesses and different hotels and travel industries can make the most of it. Some of the things you'll find very actionable, some things will be very informative, but we hope that you find it interesting nonetheless. So Mike, let's jump into the first one, which we can't start this podcast again without talking about Google. So let's start there. They recently announced that they made 4,500 changes to search result kind of algorithms in 2020 alone. So what's going on? What have they announced?
Sure. So Google, the last couple of months has made a conscious effort to kind of get more public and simple in its explanations of what search is, how it works, et cetera. So they published on their website portal of how search works. It's actually a pretty cool resource. Kind of explains well to your average folks that they've made 4,500 improvements to search in 2020. And that was in 2020 alone. And then previous year in 2019, they made 3,200 changes. And then before that, we would see a couple hundred to 1,000 a year. Now this sounds like an astronomical number, and some of it is probably some heavy hitting stuff. If you recall, this is the year where they started going into Core Vitals data and Core Vital ranking factors. Core Vitals is a big focus on how quickly pages load, how the rendering experience is. A lot of stuff that if you have a development team, you should have conversations with. If you're just a content marketer, probably not as applicable, but you should be aware of it. They basically have just outlined, they made these changes. They didn't explain what they were because they never do. But in candor, it sounds like a big number that you could probably flash around to Wall Street. But, these could be, they moved a pixel to the left. They change a color of a navigation. They sped up how they do indexing, right? There's like all these things in there that you probably can get to 4,500 fairly quickly with the scale of Google. But I think it signals that they continue to be active. I don't think in this year we had any major, let's combine 2020, 2021 into one for purposes of this point, but we didn't have like a major algorithm update that I think really, changed the landscape. So this 4,500 thing, I think it's just a number. What do you think?
It's clearly a large number. And I got thinking about it a little bit, and I thought, well, if you think about everything that happened in 2020, there was a lot that obviously happened, and one major topic was clearly COVID. And you saw their reaction to that, right? They made a lot of changes to the GMB listings to kind of show how COVID safe that certain things were. And so I can understand how they got back to it. I think what fascinated me a little bit was they said last year, or 2019, so a couple of years ago now, that in 2009, they made 350 to 400 changes. Last year, they made 10 times that in the same amount of time, 12 a day. Which is pretty phenomenal, right? If they work 365 days
a year. That's good math. Yeah. Well, I think you're right about the COVID stuff, right? Because at least they've added like, 10 to 15 attributes that then they range by industry type. All of the support level around that has changed. I recently was booking flights or looking at it. And if you look at Google Flights alone, which is a really killer site, they literally like heat map vaccination status and case counts. It's fascinating, right? It's like, I've got to think, to your point, those things are included in that 4,500.
Yeah, absolutely. I think actually you mentioned Google Flights. I too was looking at flights, and I think I have a preferred airline, but I wasn't tied to a specific date of travel. And I was actually using Google Flights because it's a far better experience than the airline website to be able to determine, okay, if I fly on, let's say, the 25th or the 26th of November, if I fly, come back on the 3rd or the 4th, it was a lot more kind of flexible. And you could say, look, I want to travel for 10 days, but I'm willing to travel in any of these 3 months, and it'll work out when the best date range for you to travel is. Compare that to an airline, specific dates, no date ranges. It's, you're right, it's a very good resource for travel booking for sure.
Yeah, I'll give him a further shout out. I had to fly up to Cape Cod for vacation, and I frankly was a little confused how to get there because it's a bay and an island. And I know there's a bunch of airports, but I couldn't track it, to your point, through the major airline. So threw it to Google Flights, and they literally explained all to me. Like, I don't think I would have figured out how to get there without them. So I guess I'm further in debt to them, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll continue in a little bit about Google. And, you know, one of the big changes that they've made more this year than last year is they're changing the way that they display title tags. However, critically, they have said that there's no effect to search results. So, Mike, again, what's going on with this?
Sure. So for years, Google has been downplaying the value and the efficacy of metadata as a phrase, right? So that's title tags and meta descriptions. As a reminder, a title tag and a meta description are largely not visible to the common user. So if you go on a website, the title tag is that little piece at the top that's in the browser tab, and you never see a meta description, like, at all, right? Unless you look at the code or you look at a search engine. So this, again, sounds like a fairly heavy hitting headline. You could even call it clickbait if you wanted to. But I think what it's continuing is this notion that, like, Google can overwrite your metadata and display it. And they're actually articulating here some of the information that they could pull in. So they could pull in your H1 tag, put it at the top. They could pull in little snippets. So I think what they're continuing to say is any of these non-user visual attributes, they're probably going to disappear within the next decade, right? Like, if you think of metadata, like you thought of, you know, meta keywords in the previous decade, you know, it was all about getting keywords in there to help rank, and then it was getting gamed and they dropped it, right? Like, title tags and meta descriptions, you can kind of do similar. And I'm also, if I'm not mistaken, I don't think a meta description has been an actual ranking factor in at least half a decade, right? So they don't, like, take that content with much gravitas to rank, but they do expose it to the user. So I think it's further consolidation and probably nothing to majorly bat an eye at. But if you're still doing SEO, I still think title tags matter, you know, but I wouldn't get obsessed with them. It's my take.
Yeah, what I found funny in doing some research about this was there was somebody that I think tweeted, like, the search advocate for Google and said,
yeah,
hey, if Google rewrites my title, does it take keywords in the title into account and measure the relevance of the page based on the new or the old? And the search advocate just responded, no. So I think that's kind of clear, right? It's just like, it's just a, maybe just a display aspect, or just making the customer journey a little bit more enhanced, I would say.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah, I think it's one of those whereas SEOs, I think we also can overthink things a lot in candor, and we think there's more impact to things than there's not. Yeah, I would say just, and then another interesting thing is I checked out a couple of our, I mean, it's not a mystery, our hotels, right? And I Googled a couple of the names in incognito mode, which is how you kind of strip off any of the personalization. I'm still seeing regular title tags I know we wrote. So we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. I think it's interesting. I think your point about overthinking things is probably very apt. That might come from what you mentioned before, as they haven't been overly clear about what ranks, you know, you higher in the search results than what doesn't before. So people tend to make their own assumptions when they see things and make assessments of various different things. So it's an interesting one to keep an eye on. And if anything breaks from it, then we'll cover it on this podcast for sure.
You bet.
So I wanted to talk a little bit about Instagram. So they announced in early July, and it was the head of Instagram recently announced that they were pivoting away from being primarily a photo sharing app, which is kind of, I thought, really their core business, which surprised me a little bit. But they mentioned that they were focusing on four key areas, which was messaging. Obviously, they're owned by Facebook, so Facebook Messenger, video, shopping, and also their creators. And one thing that they mentioned, and I don't think it's a surprise to, well, it shouldn't be a surprise to anybody, was the last 18 months have accelerated the shift from commerce to offline to online by a number of years. And that's been a very public thing, right? Lots of companies are saying that the last 18 months of COVID has really accelerated how companies interact with consumers in a digital way. If you read through what the head of Instagram was saying, though, there was one thing that stuck out to me, which I'm not really sure how I feel about it. They said they were going to experiment with sharing content to consumers, even if it's from accounts that they do not follow. So imagine you're on your Instagram page, and you'll now maybe see content that they believe that you will be interested in, but you're not following that account. So you can see this already today in Instagram Reels, which we'll talk about in a moment. But I don't know. What do you think about that, Mike? Are you open to that idea on your personal or maybe a business Instagram account?
I think so. I think some of it's paved the way, and we'll get into this a little bit, is Twitter fleets, right? It's like everybody takes inspiration from everybody, right? Like Twitter fleets were, Instagram stories were, what was it, Snapchat? I don't even know. And I think in Twitter, if you go in there today, and I know you're not very active there anymore, but I see loads of notifications from accounts I don't follow in my feed, right? So I think it's probably inevitable that you get non-followed content in your main Instagram feed. It's already in Explore. I mean, that's a web of weirdness of reels and stuff. You look at one thing one time and then you blast it for a week. So I think what I'm more bummed about is like, it just looks like they're continuing to monetize it, right? It's like, I remember there was that controversy. I think this is when we were on sabbatical, but you know, they dropped the notifications button and they replaced it with the shopping button. And it's like your muscle memory had to rewire from like the bottom to the top. That pissed me off, I'll be honest. I got over it. I didn't use it any less. So I presume I'll probably do the same here, but I don't know. It just seems a little revenue first, if you ask me.
Yeah, I mean, it's clear that they're watching TikTok, YouTube, Twitter, and making either the same move to make sure that they stay mm-hmm. on par, or they're trying to make a move ahead of them to stay more competitive. So, you know, you mentioned a couple of these, but they launched the ability for four people to go live at once instead of just the regular two, clearly to combat Clubhouse and Twitter Spaces, which we'll talk about after the break. The ability also for creators to monetize their audience, which you mentioned, you know, creators now on Instagram can earn commission based on certain products that they promote. YouTube did the same thing, and we covered that mm-hmm. on this podcast. TikTok teamed up with Shopify. Instagram allowed creators to showcase products in Reels. So they're clearly just looking at each other and saying, okay, well, if they do that, I'll do that, or I can do something different, and those others will follow as well. But I think the headline of that they're no longer just a photo sharing app, you're in somewhat blurring the lines between Instagram and Facebook a little bit more than probably what they were before.
Well, I think it's a really depth point, because if you look at, I think, the load screen for Instagram now, it says like Instagram by Facebook, and they're trying to basically, I mean, to me, it feels a little bit like Microsoft, like it's all just one big can with different permutations coming out. I think it's fine. You know, it's going to be, I mean, at some point, everything is just a copy of another thing, right? And I think, you know, at some point, Facebook stopped being like a social network, and they were then experiences and stuff. So, it all makes sense. I think it's just, you get to a point where like everything just blends with the other thing, that, you know, maybe this is the rise of the single use platform at some point comes back. But I will say that I think the shopping on Instagram stuff is really slick, right? Where they kind of do those drop-ins of points on a thing. And I've seen people get really catchy with them too, right? Where like, you know, they'll put content or a message in an image right where you can then, you know, tap, and then the shopping widget pops up. That, I think it's well done. It's just so in your face, you know? And I'm sure, you know, if you're a retailer, you love this. We're not a retailer, right? So yeah. If we were some flashy startup, probably be all over this.
Yeah, absolutely. So one thing that we briefly mentioned there was Instagram Reels. So this is something that's really getting, I guess, some good visibility. So Instagram Reels are accessible through the Instagram app. It's a small video-like button right in the center at the bottom. And they're really designed to be short, entertaining videos where Instagram say you can express your creativity and bring your brand to life. Really, it's a lot of cultural trends, allows you to kind of interact with a community that are reacting to whether it's certain music. So for example, Applebee's, the large restaurant chain, there is a song which references it, which has made it onto Instagram Reel Dance. Applebee's are now using that song within their TV advert with videos from Instagram, which I was like, that's kind of a nice tie across the board. Will it make me want to go to Applebee's more? Probably not. But it just from a marketing perspective was pretty interesting to watch.
Smart. It's real smart.
Yeah, it's really, really smart. And I think if you look at these Instagram reels, they're getting a ton of interaction when users get it right. So there's a prominent travel account which I follow, and they really post a mix of images and reels as well. So if you look at their last image that they posted, both posted on the same day, the image had around 70,000 likes. So it's a decent, you know, a decent account. They probably got a few million followers. They posted a reel and it was 350,000 views, which is significant.
Wild.
So they're getting a lot of traction through this this platform. So really, I had a look into it, and they said there's really four things which determine whether you see a reel or not. So as a user, if you watch the reel the whole way through, it will serve you other reels which are very similar to that. If you've liked it, or you comment or something like that, again, it will kind of say, okay, well, Mike or Chris, they like that particular type of content, and will continue to serve it to you. And then the last one is if you save the audio from that particular reel. So the way that reels work is within the app, you can go and save the audio, and then you can record your own version of that using someone else's audio, basically. So there's audio taken from movies or certain songs, or you can create your own. Importantly though, so based on all those four different things, you're going to see certain types of content. However, if you post a video which is low resolution, it's watermarked, and I was like, what would be watermarked? Well, think resharing your TikTok content. So if you just
create some smart, yeah,
they actually degrade that in the algorithm. So they say that shouldn't be seen by people, which I thought was kind of interesting, because at the start of Reels, that was really the thing, right? People were just picking content up from TikTok and moving it over to Instagram. And then also, if it has political content, they'll also kind of downgrade that as well. But I think if businesses are active within Instagram today and they're posting content on a regular basis, they really do need to be looking at Instagram Reels as a opportunity to drive more engagement. So there's great interaction. There's that ability to go viral if that's something that you're interested in. I think people just need to create content, see what interaction they get, what works, what doesn't, have a bit of fun with it, be creative, support the brand that you are. So if you're a, and we'll talk about hotels, but if you're a pet friendly hotel, go and create content within Instagram Reels about dogs at your hotel or certain other types of pets at your hotel. But if you hate pets and you don't allow them, then don't go create content about dogs. I mean, it's fairly straightforward, but I think this is ultimately an engagement play. It's a way of driving followers and engagement within your Instagram account. If that is a goal for your particular business, then to thus sell more products or drive awareness of your brand. But I don't know, Mike, are you going to start creating Instagram Reels or not?
I mean, probably. I mean, what I think is really smart with this is, like, we talked about the way they pulled off the notification pane, they threw it to the shopping tab. And then whenever you go to create a new piece of content now, it's like a little try. I don't have my phone on, but like there's a little, it's like three or four options for what do you create, right? And like post is on the same category as story as it is real, right? So it's like they're very much trying to get you to basically default to any of those options. And it's very clear too, like Facebook did this years ago, like no one uses photo albums anymore. And those things don't even get visibility in newsfeed, right? So same thing with like posts. And right now the majority of it is like, you know, so much of this is stories and reels that, I mean, it makes a lot of sense to me that they'd be pushing it more and kind of biasing to those features of like, you use this cool thing, you're going to get, or this, you know, this new feature, it's going to get more visibility. I think your example is spot on of like, what is it, a 3000 or 1000% multiplier. I mean, I'll probably default to doing it at some point, but I did have a question for you. And I admit I have not Googled this. So I hope you know this. What is this original audio tag thing? Like, I've seen that a lot and I don't understand like what it is and why it matters.
Yeah, I don't know 100% for sure, but my assumption is that, so within Instagram Reels, you can record a video and just post it, right? And you can record it in as many sections as you wish, right? So I could record a video of my kids going up and down the street on their skateboard, right? And you could post that as many, and that could go onto Instagram. And it would use the audio from your microphone, right? My assumption is that's the original audio. You can also post reels where, let's say you post a video taking a sound clip from a Sopranos movie or a Disney film or whatever it might be, or a certain song, go back to the Applebee's piece, right? And then I could also do that. So okay, you could save audio and then and move it that way. That would be my assumption on the difference.
Well, that's super cool. I mean, it shows you how much they want this to be kind of like a content studio, right? Because I think that's what, isn't that largely what like TikTok was? I mean, I've never even downloaded it, but like, isn't that what it was like heralded with when it was started? Of like, you can do so much in it. And like, if you spend a minute, you can get super creative that like, all that stuff sounds a little complicated, but you know, we're also a lot farther than like click button, write, you know, header, hit publish. You know, we're in a very different era now.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I've played around with Instagram Reels a little bit, and it's not, I wouldn't say it's intuitive, right? It's not something that
it's not,
you could give to my 8-year-old daughter, let's say. But I think once you got the hang of it, it's really easy. Like, it's just one of those, it's not as easy as just posting a photo like you would do traditionally on Instagram. But I think if you look through the content, if you go to Instagram, whatever type of account you have, whether it's a business, a personal account, whatever it might be, and look through Reels and look at, okay, the type of content, do you personally find it entertaining? But then also look at the engagement levels as well. And you'll see people that spend a crazy amount of time creating something that's really creative and engaging. The level of engagement will be huge. The folks where you just skip past, naturally the majority of the population are probably just skipping past as well. What I've also noticed is versus posting a photo to a compared to a reel is engagement on the photo tends to typically last, what would you say, 24, 48 hours, and then it wanes, right?
Yeah.
Like you may get a few kind of engagements later down the line, but it seems to wane after that 24, 48 hours. What I've noticed with Instagram Reels is the time span is a lot shorter than that. You're talking a few hours, you'll get a burst of engagement and then it tends to die down. I guess unless you get the one where it's had like a million views or, you know, then it's really, it just really, really lasts. But yeah, the engagement length seems different to me, but that's just an assumption based on my own personal experience.
No, that's great insights, because in Canada, I would have thought was maybe the reverse, right? Because I feel like they're starting to downplay or traditional posts that reels would be around longer. But you know, I have not gone as deep as you, sir. But that's great insight.
One thing I did notice with Instagram though is I tested some content on a personal page that wasn't my own, and I noticed that if you post. I tested out basically posting photos with text overlay versus just photos. Right now, clearly it wasn't a traditional A/B test where you post, you know, the same thing at the same time and you just split the audience. So there could have been a factor of there was just more people live, different time of day, that type of thing. But the content was very similar. One time posted with photo with text overlay, one time just posting photo. The photo without the text overlay was considerably higher in terms of engagement. So I noticed a lot of, it more happens within sports than it does anywhere else that I've seen, but a lot of places will post certain games and they'll actually lay text overlay. But I wonder if they didn't do that and posted just traditional photos, whether their engagement would be higher.
That's a good point, because I feel like my nascent observation is that's reserved for stories. Right? Like there's a place for those things. And then if they, or even if you like, you put an Instagram story as like a Facebook post, like it doesn't get much visibility because they're doing something to clock it down to your points from before of like, it's just suppressed in the feed. It's, I think this is one of those funny concepts where like everybody was so terrified of like Google's algorithm a decade ago. And now it's like, it's everything. Everything's an algorithm, you know? And now the SEOs are the 12-year-olds that, you know, are probably living in your house, right?
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, let's take a quick break. And then when we come back, we'll talk more about Google, of course, and then some changes with Twitter as well.
Interested in learning more about digital marketing? Check out our website, mdsdecoded.com.
All right. So welcome back to Decoded. Thanks for coming back after the break. So we're now going to run through a couple of news updates from Google, both also Twitter, and then also something that's very close to my heart, the HSMAI Marketing Strategy Conference, which is this month. So Mike, Google seems to be, as we mentioned, more vocal than ever regarding communicating updates and offering advice. And they recently announced that the linked spam update is recently completed. And this was announced just a few days ago on August 27th. So what did they announce and how does it impact people?
The best way to describe it is, I think, just in candid, reading the tweet that one of the Google accounts published, and I'll go through it right now. If you monetize your website and blogs with affiliate links or sponsored guest posts, it's very important to qualify these links. Learn more about commercial links and spam here. What that is kind of code for is like, don't do it, right? And it's more or less continuing Google to tramp down on what are, you know, age old spammy techniques that people think still matter somehow, or that you can game your way to the top with. And I mean, this has just been one of Google's tenets for, again, probably a couple decades at this point of if there is a paid relationship between a party and an advertiser, and in reality, those are influencers now, right? You need to disclose that. And it's what they're basically saying is like, if Chris is contracted by Applebee's to be an influencer, you need to denote that, right? And I think a lot of this connects back to those kind of hashtag ad kind of guidelines that I believe were supposed to be in place if you published an organic post but didn't identify it as an ad. Now again, that's on the social media side of things, but I think this is very similar in that you have to disclose it, or if they find out that there's a relationship there, they're going to knock it down. What's your take?
It's fair. I remember, I mean, this was years ago, years and years ago, when I first started getting into digital marketing. I was doing an exercise, looking at some competitors for one of the hotels that I was working with at the time. And this hotel always appeared at the top of the search results. And we started doing some digging around. And basically what they'd done is they paid a load of other websites to be listed at the bottom under the anchor text hotel in XYZ destination on every page, basically. And you looked at their number of inbound links. And at the time, they were the kind of, they were the thing, right? They were what you needed. I can never remember what the name of the hotel is. And I'd love to know what I'd love to remember it, because I'd love to go back and see if they've changed their strategy. You would hope they would, but I think it's good. I mean, they're again, it all comes back to the customer experience, right? And making sure that they're giving the best possible experience and the best possible results. And people aren't gaming the system, I would say.
I think it's smart. And I think it's one of those unfortunate realities that every year they need to do something about this, because people are gaming like you game an Instagram post or something, right? Like the number of, and by post, I mean whatever type of content you're publishing, right? Like if you hashtag that thing to death with erroneous stuff, it's like those things are, you know, at some point you're working on a short shelf life, right?
So let's jump into Twitter. So they've made a couple of big changes in the last few weeks and months. So Fleets, which we spoke about on this show, I think was around March or April time, they're now gone. So this was a product which was an Instagram story-like product. It was described at the time by Twitter as a low-pressure, short-lived way for people to share their fleeting thoughts. And basically, Fleets appeared at the top of the timeline as a blue circle highlighted people's profile pictures, a la Instagram stories. And it was live for 24 hours, aka Instagram stories. It lasted a grand sum of 9 months, so not particularly long. They gave a 30-day notice, and they left Twitter on August 3rd. They described it as they didn't see the uptick they'd hoped for, and they hoped it would have encouraged people to change and new people to come to the platform. Ultimately, what it did was just people that were already within Twitter just kind of reposted their tweets in there, or just changed the way that we're using the platform versus attracting more people. So, Mike, are you sad about losing access to Fleets?
I'm a little heartbroken. In candor, I thought it was silly from the beginning, right? Like I applaud them for trying new features. I think when you blatantly rip off another one, it's a little distasteful. But to your point, I mean, I never looked at them as a point of fact, and then the occasional time I accidentally tapped one, it was a tweet screenshotted as a Fleet. What was your experience?
Exactly the same. And then I just stopped looking at it, to be honest. Yeah. And it's a bit like the LinkedIn version of it. They did the same thing. If you actually try and, I would encourage anybody, just post a few things within the LinkedIn stories and see what engagement you get, because it will be marginally low, I would say.
I forgot those even exist.
Yeah, so there you go.
One thing on LinkedIn though that I do love, and this is the smallest detail, and I'm sure that it's an old man thing. I love the icon reactions, like how just like whimsical they are. Like I know it's the evolution of like the heart, the care, etc. But like I just love them, man. Like the applause, the brilliant idea. They're just fun.
Yeah, they're really well designed. I think obviously Facebook have a very similar feature. Right. But I find the one on LinkedIn that kind of less intentional, right? They're a bit more cartoony drawn, right? They're a little bit less in your face. So yeah, I really like those too. There's a nice feature that they launched, I think it was last year that they did that. But with Twitter, clearly they don't stand still, right? So they Fleets is gone, but they replaced that positioning with something called Twitter Spaces. So if you're wondering what Twitter Spaces is, ultimately it's Clubhouse on Twitter. So it's an audio conversation which is live. Like Clubhouse, they are truly live. So while the conversation is happening, you can listen to it at any point, but when the conversation is finished, it will no longer be publicly available on Twitter. They allow up to 13 people to have a live conversation at once, an unlimited number of listeners, if you will. If you choose to host a Twitter space, you can schedule them and remind people as you get closer to the time that you're going live, if you will. Thinking back to when we spoke about Clubhouse in March, which when it was like all the rage, that feature wasn't available on Clubhouse, but it is now. So you can start to see again that kind of like them looking over the fence a little bit about what each other's are doing. Interestingly, while this doesn't typically apply to businesses, if it did, you would have to question why they've got a Twitter account. But accounts with protected tweets are not able to create spaces. So you have to have kind makes of a pub. Yeah, it makes sense. I can't imagine a business would create a Twitter account and then protect it. I mean, that doesn't resonate with me. But again, that's just that one of the only restrictions. I think, you know, if you've got a large audience on Twitter already and a large level of engagement, it could be a good option if you're interested in the audio form of communication and gaining engagement and you've got a decent number of followers in that space. Businesses can look at this, right? They can, whether it's featuring interviews with staff, it could be a regular slot like we do this podcast, like that can be replicated in that forum if you've got a large space. And like we said with Instagram Reels, it's an engagement play. It's just creating more visibility of your account and your profile within that medium, right?
Yeah, I agree. It's they're trying out new tools and levers. And if I mean, I remember when Facebook and Twitter Live was all the rage, and it seems like those kind of like ephemeral conversations or events, or to your point, like showcasing stuff with employees or whatever, you know, that was, you know, live video. Now it seems to be live audio is an option. My two cents is I don't have enough time of the day to care about catching up on something like this. So I'm more of a podcast, listen to it when I like type of person, but I can imagine if I wasn't a working person, this would be some pretty cool stuff, right? Like just jump in and hear, you know, a news broadcaster I like, or a pundit, or, you know, a general authority on something talking, right? I don't know if I'd listen to a friend of mine just, you know, narrating their morning or something, but I could see the value of it if you're just like bored and flipping around.
The only thing that I wish they would do is save the audio and publish it to that person's Twitter account.
Yeah. Good point.
If they did that, that would make that product like exceptional, because I'm like you, right? You get distracted. Tell me the amount of times you signed up for a webinar circa 1999, and not attended, but waited for the recording so you could listen on demand while you were doing, like, all the time. It happens. So, you know, maybe that is something that they'll explore in the future. But yeah, I think it's interesting to watch. I've been keeping an eye. There doesn't seem to be too many accounts engaging with it. I've seen it a couple of times within Twitter, but nothing too major. So we'll keep an eye on it, and maybe we'll try it out one day as well.
Sure. And then we'll have audience of four, right? And then maybe we can repost the audio then, right? And show them how it's done. I mean, I think that's an interesting thing that, like, I know Sirius does that, right? Where, like, there was this very, I mean, I don't subscribe to Sirius anymore, but there was a long period of time where they would not post the interviews as podcasts. And now if you go into the Sirius app, that's basically all it is, right? Is like, it was those conversations chopped up as podcast that you can go back and listen to. And that's also what YouTube is, right? Is like, there's so many places that, like, they will record something, chop it up and spray it. And then, like, that's where these things get shelf life from. And you can just then insert ads against them. So I've got to believe you're right that, like, at some point that stuff's probably going to come back from the dead and get monetized, which would be kind of cool.
Yeah, absolutely. It will get monetized eventually. So just lastly, something that we just mentioned, but something that's ultra close to my heart, the HSMAI Marketing Strategy Conference is coming up on September 28th. So this month, so only 4 weeks ago, as we 4 weeks to go until from when we're recording this, but it's going to be held in Dallas, Texas. It's an in-person event only, so they're not doing the hybrid thing. So the cool thing about this is that it's in line with HITECH, which is a hospitality technology conference that takes place on the Monday. The marketing strategy conference takes place on the Tuesday, and then the HSMAI ROC, which is revenue optimization conference, that takes place on the Wednesday. And throughout the week, there's lots of opportunities for additional learning. Folks can take the Certified Hotel Digital Marketer. They can do the revenue management version of that. So anybody that is within hospitality digital marketing, this is really the event that people look forward to. I've seen the agenda and the speakers. It looks fantastic. There's a few names that people might remember from this podcast. Ashish from Pinterest is doing a keynote speech there. SVPs of digital for Wyndham Hotels and Crescent Hotels. There's a lot of good stakeholders and people there that will be sharing ideas. There's lots of education, networking, and something that I'm personally excited about. It'll be many people's first conference in 18 months, 2 years. So we'll put the registration link in the show notes. But if anybody has the slightest bit of interest, I would encourage that they look into it and try and attend if possible.
Are you going?
I am. I have to go. I'm part of the HSMAI, so I will be. I'll be stepping on an aeroplane and attending the conference. There's probably a couple of hundred people going, I would say. I think that were the last numbers. So there's a decent number of folks attending. So that it should be fun. And when you look through the attendee list, it's all the people that you've been working with for the last 18 months, 2 years, and it's all been through Zoom and Teams and. Just to be able to interact with people and listen to a keynote speech that isn't through your AirPods or your computer speakers will be pretty interesting.
Hey, have a blast. I mean, looking through the partner list here, to like two of our marketing friends, BCB and Tambourine, are there. And I mean, to your point, get us those decks and reshare some of the stuff and meet someone that we can bring on as guests. I think that'll be a lot of fun. So have fun and be safe.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's bring this to a close for our first one back after our little break. We'll be back in 2 weeks on Monday again with another round of news. But thanks again, Mike, for joining.
Thank you, Chris. And we'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening. This was Decoded, a Marriott Digital Services podcast. Be sure to leave us a review. It really does help other people find the show. And of course, subscribe so you never miss an episode. Do you have a question or topic you would like us to discuss on the show? We'd love to hear from you. Email us at mds@marriott.com. And remember, you can learn more about digital marketing and gain travel insights on our website at mdsdecoded.com. See you next time.